It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Garden Report is brought to you by FanDuel, the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network.
Normally, you know, these sad shows are just me and Bobby, but we've got Josue Pavone, couldn't get a date tonight.
Sherrod, hey, Blakely. I was out last Sunday. Give me some credit.
Hey, taking it easy tonight.
Sherrod Blakely in Atlanta, never misses a trip down there.
Always.
Covering the Celtics, you know.
We get the highlights right behind him. Look at that.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
We're getting copyrighted for this. one thing we do want to tell you before we get started, and we'll mention this again later in the show, but one of the exciting things happening at CLNS Media this week, and for those of you out there in the Bay State who like to lay some action, you know, from time to time, as I know some of you may, we are now partnered with FanDuel. It's the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network and the frontline sponsor here at the Garden Report. If you are interested in taking advantage of some special offers right now, all you have to do is do exactly that. Head over to FanDuel.com/Boston. That's how you're going to be clued into a special deal here that we are offering. $200. All you have to do is bet $5. FanDuel.com/Boston, and you can get yourself a $200 in bonus bets. So please check that out. Definitely very cool. I think something that you know, for those of you out there that like to play a little bit, this is as good an opportunity as you're going to have. Please do it through us. And if you are going to sign up, and you do sign up through the FanDuel.com/Boston URL. Save the receipts, because there will be some bonuses that go out to some of our viewers and some of our fans when you do support our sponsors. So we do appreciate that. We'll tell you more a little later. We're going to get into the game. Celtics win. Sherrod, you were there, so you get to go first. Go.
Good game. I mean, for the most part, I thought the Celtics, you know, they came in here and they did what they hoped to do, which was get control of the game and never really seize control of that. I had a chance to talk to Malcolm Brogdon before the game, and, you know, we talked about just the approach going forward. And he said, you know, for them, it's about seeding. It's about trying to get that number one spot back, because they know for them to do that, it's going to force them to play better than they have been playing of late. And the one other thing he said, and it felt almost like prophetic looking at how this game was starting to kind of teeter-totter, he said it was important for them to finish games strong. Because remember, when they were going through those doldrums, it wasn't like they were playing bad games. It's just that they were playing bad stretches in those games where they were having double-digit leads and they were just choking them away. You felt that this game was kind of teetering in that direction for a little bit. But the one thing that jumped out to me about this game was that they came up with so many big plays at the defensive end of the floor. Blake Griffin with a block shot near the end of the second quarter. You know, Jaylen Brown got a steal layup for Derek White the other way, all within like a matter of seconds. You know, Sam Hauser, I thought, made a couple of plays where he cut off driving lanes that led to turnovers. They did so many different little things that if you're trying to be the best team in the East and get that home court advantage throughout the playoffs, you're going to need to do that consistently. And this was a good start in that direction. But obviously, they've got to figure out a way to do this with a lot more regularity going forward.
Yep. Go ahead, Bobby.
Tonight had some of the frustrations we've seen over the last week or two here, but you saw progress from all the different things Joe Mazzulla has talked about, which I think is the most encouraging thing out of this one, even if it wasn't a perfect game, is I think they played the way he wanted to pretty attentively throughout this one. And it worked to manage that lead through the second half through those different Hawks runs. Lineup still a work in progress. I thought the bench was great at extending that lead. The starters didn't do as well of a job maintaining it, especially late into the game. And you had all the highs and lows of Marcus Smart in this one again, which is going to be, I think, right up there among their priorities late this season. Is not to mention seeding, as you said, Shrod, but getting Smart right. And tonight he veered closer at times. Still a rough game from the field. Unspectacular finish with the ejection, but still those Smart plays, the tip out offensive rebound and the three right after, that was a super important play down the stretch. That's another thing Joe's emphasized lately, are those offensive rebounds. And defensively, I thought he gave them some good plays throughout the course of this game too, but it was another night where you got White and Brogdon rolling and Smart not as much on the offensive end, making a few mistakes, that missed layup, and it took until the ejection to finally get Brogdon back out there.
That turnover, too.
Exactly. I mean, you knew he was trying to do something funky on that layup when he turned over.
Interesting
thing about Marcus Smart and what's happened to him over the past few weeks is he's reverted back into old Marcus, not entirely with his play, even though there's more flashes of old Marcus than last year's I'm running the show, you know, good point guard Marcus, but more in the fact that he has once again turned into that incredibly polarizing figure that's going to literally be the death of us throughout the rest of the year and into the postseason, as too much Marcus, not enough Marcus. Is Marcus the reason you're winning? Is Marcus the reason you're losing? Is Marcus shooting too much? You know, should Marcus be closing? Should it be this guy? And he's going to be at the center of it. So it's just like old times with Marcus Smart. He's back to his old polarizing self.
It'll be the story of the chat tonight.
There's two stories of the chat tonight. What's funny is Grant is the new Marcus, but now Grant doesn't even play anymore. So now Marcus is back to being the old Marcus in terms of how we're going to talk about him. And you know, again, how he's going to get talked about. There's just that stuff that frustrates you to the point that you want to just rip your eyeballs out when you're watching it. And then it's, as you said, tip outs, clutch threes, great plays, you know, perfectly timed grifts, you know, to be able to draw fouls and things like that. And then he's still going to do that stuff. But, you know, old Marcus used to rely entirely on that kind of stuff to justify his value. The guy we've seen over the course of the last year was a very, you know, a much more consistent floor general and point guard and leader. So let's just focus on that. As far as his play on the court, is there some slippage here with Marcus?
I mean,
yes.
Yeah. To a certain extent, I mean, offensively, sure. But in terms of being a playmaker, I mean, he's still making strides in the right direction, right? Yeah. I don't think it's one of those cases where he's completely gone the other way like he was last year, where he was still trying to figure things out. I mean, he's figured that part out. I just think that instead of the shot selection thing being more drawn out where it was before, you're seeing it in smaller stints. You know, it's a little bit off in that regard in terms of when he wants to attack and when he wants to just decide to throw up shots. I mean, but as a point guard, he's been solid in my opinion. I mean, in terms of getting guys the ball, he just makes those plays every now and then. But then again, John, when the season started, it's exactly why they went out and got someone like Malcolm Brogdon, right? To reinforce when things are going bad. And I think that this was a good example of that. Not just the ejection, but just overall. I felt like Brogdon had a good game. I think this team is starting to close out quarters better. I think that was the biggest drop off in that throughout that losing streak, especially in the fourth quarter. So yeah, they did make it a 2-possession game, the Hawks, but when it mattered the most, the Celtics did close this out. And they did it with the 8-man rotation. Now, I think that's the part of this one when you're like, okay, well, the three guys off the bench played well, but like this whole playoff approach with Joe Mazzulla, it's interesting because it's a 6-game road trip, and it'll be interesting to see how his approach night in and night out, if this is going to be the norm.
Well, I think part of the issue, Joe Sway, I think is that Marcus never really had guys that were close enough in terms of talent and ability to where there was legitimate competition to be the playmaker. Like if you're playing behind Kyrie Irving, guess what? He's better than you. When you're playing behind Isaiah Thomas, who was a 2-time All-Star, he's clearly better than you. But Malcolm Brogdon, Derek White are good players and have shown themselves to be really impactful players. And in many respects, they've shown to be better than Marcus in other areas, not so much. And I think Marcus is still is in this season has been one of discovery for him, trying to figure out what can he do to be a stabilizing force. And I wish he would just stick to what he did last year, because that worked. I thought that worked really well. But I think now he's in his head, he's thinking, sometimes I maybe need to score and take shots more. I need to take more chances with my passing. There are things that he's doing now that used to drive us nuts, because there were things that he had control of not doing. And now he's reverting back to doing a lot of those things. And you just wonder if, you know, Joe is going to get to the point where he's just going to just significantly cut his minutes. Because if we're being honest and real, Malcolm is playing really good basketball. Derek Yep. White is playing really good basketball. And if you're talking about how you're going to divide the minutes between those three, you definitely, I don't believe, should be giving them equal minutes. I think right now, if you had to have a pecking order, you kind of have to have put Marcus at the back of that, just because of Yep. the fact that those other two guys are making a greater impact. And it's Yeah. not that Marcus is making a bad one. It's just that those guys are making more right now.
It's not bad one, but he's clearly not physically all the way, you know, there. I think he's been banged up. I mean, Bobby kind of, you know, was among the first to, you know, when he spoke to Marcus in the off season, was kind of like, you know, right before the season started, was that right, Bobby?
Yeah, training camp.
Yeah, the ankle's still like a massive issue. And like, it was like, oh, so he was dragging stuff from last year into this year and then just hasn't really been able to be fully healthy. I don't know if his conditioning was necessarily at exactly the point he'd wanted to be to begin the year. And Marcus has done that before, and he's come in and kind of played his way into peak Marcus.
He's re-injured that same ankle three times.
But he's injured it so many times at this point that I think he's, you know, there's some juice missing there. And as Sherrod alluded to, Sherrod said, the other guys are playing really, really well. So it is, I mean, I think if you ran a poll, you know, I mean, I think it's very obvious, you know, you poll every single Celtics fan. I know there's a bunch of people that want to believe in Marcus, but I think it's D. White 1, Malcolm 2, and Marcus 3, I think pretty clearly, definitively at this point.
And I still, you know, and I'm still a big Marcus Smart believer, don't get me wrong, but it's right now, just based on what we've seen the last few weeks, there really should be a different kind of pecking order. And here's another thing I'm just throw out there, and it's from my conversation with Malcolm this morning, and I didn't know this until he brought it up. Malcolm has never been hit with a technical foul.
In his career.
In his career. And my jaw just dropped.
Smart guy too tonight.
Like, how the hell can you be in the league this damn long and not pick up a technical at all? There were a couple. Yeah, he said there were a couple of close calls, you know, where he was just, you know, oh, ref, that's a bad call, but they didn't hit him with a tech. He said, but that's just who he is. And you have to respect that. That's how he plays. You can't expect that from Marcus Smart. But there has to be a line that Marcus has to redefine and redraw that doesn't allow these type of things to happen. Because if they would have lost this game, you know damn well what the story would have been. Marcus Smart cost him the game. Yeah. Even though obviously there were other things that went down that didn't go their way. But the bottom line is he has to be better, not only in terms of his play, but also his poise. That's yeah. the thing that really kind of...
That's what's crazy to me. Like, I mean, the question there would be like, you do it with a 6-7-8 point lead or whatever it was at that point. Does he do it in a tie game? Does he have the wherewithal to not? Did he hedge? Did he kind of think about it and say, yeah, it's worth it. You know, we're still gonna win, and I'm gonna get my pound of flesh here, because I wonder if there's a calculation or if it was just a straight up emotional reaction, regardless of game or situation. But yeah, that's the whole point. Like, you can't be the floor leader and also just be dumb. Like, not saying Marcus is dumb, but you just can't check your brain at the door at critical moments. Like, it's just not an option. You've always got to be able to rise above it. Of course, there are going to be moments where the heat of the game and X, Y, and Z, but that wasn't one. That was I didn't love that, so I'm going to go say something about it. It wasn't a dirty, dirty play. He didn't get friggin' rambist from behind or something like that. It just was kind of like, all right, I'm just going to take a walk by if you want, but don't put hands on people. Like, there was no reason to do that at all.
Because here's the thing. I mean, all it took was those couple of free throws, a quick Celtics turnover, a three by Atlanta, and now you've got a situation where you've got to get a basket on the road against a team that, you know, was pretty much ready to call it a night and just say that this was a good effort, good try type of game.
Yep.
And now they got a chance to win it. And it could have easily gone that way. So I hate this type of game for Marcus, because he's a better person than this. He's a better player than this, but he's got to put more poise.
So my question would be this then. If Marcus is a little banged up and you're getting terrific play out of your other players and you're relatively healthy with everything else, at this point, again, not getting all over the load management debate again, would it be the worst thing in the world to, Horford him a little bit, one on, one off, maybe limit some minutes? Like, why do you need to ride Marcus 35, 36 minutes into every single game? And again, another 36 tonight, and that's with Brogdon playing great and obviously White starting. So when White's in there, White's going to get his 36 too. I understand it, but you went really short bench. You went with an 8-person bench. You're leaving a lot on the table here. I think you can get away with.
Well, Pritchard's hurt now, right?
Yeah, but and the Pritchard thing doesn't help, but you can get away with less if you really needed to.
White and Brogdon alone.
Yeah, but what are you going to – you going to punish him, John? I mean
– No, I want to rest him.
You rest him after the break, though. I mean, after the road trip, though, no? I think this is an important time where you want to get the most out of these guys.
Here's what we're talking about.
I'm glad Brogdon's talking about the standings because no one has mentioned that. So that's a development for me.
Yeah, that's one, Josue. But you're also looking to reestablish rhythm with Smart and get him back to being himself. I mean, we've had this conversation about him for 6 years at the least, whether he's helping you or hurting you more. I think at this point we know he's helping you more than he's hurting you in the aggregate, especially in a playoff situation. Down the stretches of these games, I think he does some random stuff like the tip out tonight that can really help you. But the decision-making, he doesn't seem in a flow, in a rhythm, in a connection with everybody, whether it was that weird high post shot turnaround he took tonight, some of the timing on the passes, and then of course I think the transition play was just a brain fart that he was wide open on in that situation. So you had a ton of stuff going on with him tonight, but I feel the same way about him that I do as Grant. He's not playing good right now. He's making his way back, and you need to roll with him through that. And yes, White and Brogdon are killing opponents in that second unit. You take that. I think you use that as an advantage. I think they might have found something tonight with that second unit. But I'm rolling with Smart as a starter, as a closer. It's going to be a feel thing for Joe, though, on the nights where he really doesn't have it and you really feel good about those other guys. You have to do it. You have to. And tonight, tough call.
I'm rolling with you with that, but I think there are opportunities within the framework of the game to get Malcolm more minutes, to allow him to be more impactful, and he's already making a hell of an impact as it is. I think you have to look at ways to not necessarily carve Marcus out of what you're trying to do, but just trim back some of those minutes. Because Marcus, at this point, he should be high 20s, maybe low 30s. He should not be playing 30. I mean, and to me, you're talking about basically trimming him by 5 minutes. You can give 2 or 3 of those minutes to Malcolm, 2 or 3 of those minutes to Derek. And to me, I'm good at that point because that allows Marcus to play more than enough to get that flow, get that rhythm that we know he needs to get back into in order to be the best version of himself. And it rewards Malcolm and it rewards Derek for playing really good basketball. And Malcolm, and again, the thing about Malcolm Brogdon, that I'm just, as you spend more time around him, you discover – he's just a real methodic player who isn't going to whether
he was great tonight.
Whether things are crazy or whether things are just real mellow, he's not going to change his demeanor. You can't rattle him. He's to me, I would hate playing against a guy like that because no matter what I did to him, no matter what I said, it's not going to matter.
He's a robot. Even when he's not playing well, he just keeps playing his game.
You need players like with that type of even temperament who can play. Yeah. Yeah, particularly when you get to the playoffs, when you absolutely need stability as a team, as an organization, as a roster, he's a guy. He needs to play 35 minutes a game in the playoffs. I don't know how Joe really needs to make that happen.
Well, there was a discussion, every fan seems to think they know, the health of every Celtic. So I'm being told by people Grant Williams is being rested because of his elbow, even though nobody knows that. And I was being told that Robert Williams' minutes were being managed because they're saving him for the playoffs, but nobody knows that. And I've also been told that Malcolm Brogdon's only playing in the 20s with his minutes because they're saving him for the long term. Again, we don't know that. What we do know is Malcolm Brogdon is a person who you were worried might be an injury risk. And for the most part, knock on wood, you've kind of made it through the bulk of the season with him intact. So if it was a ploy or if it was a plan, great. hats off, kudos. But you're right. Heading into the playoffs, he's one of your better players. He's a consistent offensive player. He does things a lot of other people don't do. He settles the game. He attacks. He creates his own offense and just plays with a calm and a poise and control. Even when he doesn't have his good games, how often you leave a game and you're like, you look at the box and you're like, Malcolm was 2 for 13, but I don't feel like he played bad, you know, like, and that's kind of a gift because that's kind of the way he plays. He's not doing dumb stuff that's going to drive you insane all the time. We're killing each other here. I'm going to put up the Brogdon lower third. There it is. We just kept spotting each other.
I thought it was just you the whole time. But,
blink. So we'll talk more about Brogdon. I think this minutes conversation is really interesting. Also, the great disappearing act of Grant Williams, which it just gets weirder by the minute and by the day here. And then also just, again, when Grant goes down, Blake comes up. And Blake had a legit game tonight. So a ton of super interesting thing to talk about. So let's get back to what we were talking about briefly. Grant Williams, what's up here? Again, we've had this conversation. I don't want to belabor it all over again, but what have we seen now, right? We've seen since the free throws, a story come out about his elbow, him not play for the first three quarters of the last game at all. People trying to guess, maybe it's the elbow. Maybe he's hurt. He comes out in the fourth quarter. He doesn't at all look hurt. He goes out there, jacks a bunch of shots, plays the whole fourth quarter. Not the type of thing you would do to somebody if you were resting them to be injured. It doesn't make sense that he's being rested. I'm sorry. I know people want that to be true.
In the doghouse.
It does not make sense if he's going to play an entire fourth quarter with no restrictions and shoot the ball a million times, which he did last game. So they are not resting him. If they wanted to rest him, they would just not suit him up. He would appear on the injury report.
That's a big one, right?
An elbow injury. He is not appearing on it as questionable or probable ever on the days leading up, and they are required to put everyone on there if they have something that's deemed significant, or else the league will
look into report them
and find them and report them. So if the Celtics believed anything was going on with Grant Williams right now that was even marginally close to preventing him from playing, they have to put him on an injury report. So again, he's not playing because he's hurt. He's not playing for blank. Did he do something? Is he ineffective? Did the injury and a little ailment render him ineffective? Is he using it as an excuse? Is he in the doghouse? This is a real, I don't get it. Because again, going back to what Bobby said, the other show, like, they need him in theory if he were to play kind of at the highest level we've seen Grant Williams play.
Blake told me that on Wednesday, same exact sentiment.
Yeah, and so I get the feeling that behind the scenes there's a sentiment that, like, there's something not right with the way Grant's approaching the game, his mentality. He's got himself into a slump. He's not as effective as he once was, and they think he can get out of it, but he hasn't been able to get himself out of it. So, Sherrod, again, I'll start with you. I don't know if you have any insights into this or any kind of informed opinions on what you think is going on with this guy.
I think what we're seeing with Grant is Joe Mazzulla making a coaching decision. And he's going to go with the guys who are being most impactful. And, we talked about Marcus Smart a little bit earlier about how polarizing he can be, where there's really good Marcus Smart stuff and then there's not so good Marcus Smart stuff. You're not getting the really good Grant Williams stuff at all now. And so for Joe, I think it's a pretty easy call to sit him, particularly when you got Blake Griffin, who you really haven't used much at all this year, who clearly has some juice, left. He still has some gas left in the tank. And you've got Sam Hauser playing not great defense, but absolutely acceptable defense, and he's knocking down shots lately. So those two factors to me are the rationale, if you're Joe Mazzulla, why you're not going to play Grant. Because if he's not going to stretch the floor, his defense isn't standing out. What exactly is he giving us when he's on the floor right now?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think they've given up on Grant. I think more than anything, they're just saying, okay, let's just kind of just go with this other group, and at some point we'll work you back into the mix. But, again, the thing about Grant, he's just one of those guys he's going to figure out what he has to do to be better.
Do we,
and he's going to have a
– He needs to get on the court.
Yeah, I think so. But I think he's got to earn it. I think he has to earn back Missoula's trust. I mean, I don't think it was.
How do you do that? There's how many games left?
You work hard in practice. You do things behind the scenes that we're not going to see.
No, honestly. 14.
Look, when this whole thing 14 started. 14
games and there's not a lot of practices. Like, I don't know what you do here.
But when this whole thing started, though, no one pointed to Grant's stats. Like, look at what he was doing in February or lack thereof. Look at the result of the team winning when he wasn't in the rotation a lot of the times, right? I just think Joe Mazzulla has found other ways to put together a win that doesn't involve Grant. And I think a lot of it is, you know, his performance on the floor, you know, was he averaging like 7 to 8 points throughout that month of February, shooting well below 40% from the three-point arc, which is from the field, right? And then compared to what he was doing last year, I mean, he's been going in the other direction for a while. And I feel like Mazzulla I honestly give him props for making that decision, because he's always been sort of kind of the keep it safe, you know, kind of guy when it comes to his rotations. But ever since the All-Star break, or ever since after the All-Star break, he's not playing around anymore. He's got this eight-man rotation.
And remember, there was
And if you're not bringing it, you're not going to play. I like it. You know, I like
what remember, doing. There was a point where Sam Hauser was out of the mix, and he got an opportunity to get back
in January.
And he
has right.
That's fine.
I think Grant will get an opportunity. It's just a matter of, will he make the most of that opportunity to reintroduce himself to the rotation?
I think it's the bullshit. Right. I think it's the bullshit as much as the play.
Oh, that's on top of the tube, John. Absolutely.
You think he sent a message?
I think it's the bullshit. Yeah. I really do. I think as much as anything, it's enough,
and it didn't help.
Stop talking to the people. Right. Stop talking to the refs. Like, you're barely doing what I'm sending you out there to do. Just shut up and play. Like, who are you at this point?
Right.
I do think there's part of that where Joe might just be like, dude, enough. I don't think that helps him at all. Like, I think it's – so, again, I'm going to read a quote from Mazzulla here.
It's like your play's not even backing it up, man. Like, stop it, you know?
Joe, again, if you don't think – when they're talking about, you've got Joe and Al right now in the locker room saying these things about Blake Griffin. And when they're saying them about Blake, if you don't think this isn't a subtweet of Grant, I don't know what to tell you. Okay. On Blake Griffin, when he's on the floor, everyone is better. Okay. Mm-hmm. Al on Blake, everything he brings, he lifts our group. It's good to see him getting some minutes and showing a different side that our group has.
Okay, Grant's like, not you
those
too.
Are friggin'
like, damn.
That's it. Those are at Grant.
He's like, Al said that? Al? Damn.
Those are pointed at Grant with a bullet, I think. And it's not.
Well, Sherrod is the only one that got my back now? Oh, damn.
There's no venom behind it. It's almost like a message. Like, so do you get it, Grant? Like, go out there and lift us. Like, don't, you know, like. So anyway. I think those things are messages.
Yeah, and again, you have to absolutely give Blake props for what he's done.
Totally.
Because I mean, he was really good tonight. And again, the thing that I'm loving about Blake, and I had a conversation with someone else about this today, was that Blake might be one of the few Hall of Fame type guys who has completely revamped their game in order to fit the needs of the team he's with. Remember, Blake was above the rim doing chin-ups on anyone and everyone, jumping
over his hands. His body forced him, though, for sure.
Right, but he embraced adapted. That, though. A lot of players have physical transformations that they don't fully embrace. Like, if I'm a guy that goes and gets buckets and my body can't do that anymore, am I going to become a defender? Am I going to be a guy trying to draw charges? Am I going to do all those nitty-gritty, grimy-type things? Probably not, but Blake has embraced that. But tonight, he showed that he still has a little bit of lift left when called upon, and he can score. He's not going to go out there and get you 25, 30 points, but he can still get you buckets.
Yo, that's super accurate, man. I think
that's really funny.
I think Grant's going to be like, yo, Al said that? Really, Al?
I don't know if there are any Simpsons fans out there.
I'm still keeping my Grant stock. I'm still keeping my Grant stock. I don't care what
anybody else says.
I forgot about that.
The Valentine's Day episode of The Simpsons when with Ralph and Lisa when she breaks his heart, If anybody's seen that, that's what it's just, and they slow mo it, and she does it on national TV at the Krusty special, and it's, you know, and like that's what happened here with Grant and Al. Really brutal stuff. But look, I mean, again, I said this the other day. I really believe that this is not the end of Grant's story. I think there's more. Right. I think there's a chance of redemption here, but
the chance, John, is that they have nobody else. I mean, Blake isn't Grant. He brings a role to this team that's important. He gives you relief on nights when you need it, particularly when Robert Williams is down. But Blake isn't going to play the role Grant played last postseason, and I don't think Mike Muscala is in that fold either. He has disappeared as well. And Luke certainly isn't Grant either. You need Grant. He does things no one else in that front court does. He just needs to get back in a rhythm just like Smart, and that's why I do want to see him out there down the stretch. Could the antics be part of it, John? I think so. But we know Ime Udoka was willing to bench him as well, and Grant was playing so well last year that he wouldn't do it. And even Ime had his confrontations with Grant publicly over doing too much. I think it got to that point with Grant this year, particularly on attacking closeouts where he took some wild shots. I think he had a 1-for-8, 0-for-8 game against Charlotte at one point, driving and shooting from in between. He's below 40% on mid-range shots this year. So they have this shot profile where they're trying to get off a ton of threes. And I know we think of Grant as a three-point shooter, but he's actually not shooting a lot of threes. Three per game. Hauser takes more, even though Hauser plays less.
I mean, Hauser just gets it off quicker, and that's the difference. Honestly, between them right now,
I think Hauser's the guy who's really emerging and pushing.
That's what we saw happen. Is if, and again, how much of this is, and again, I'll make another kind of analogy here. You know, it's like anyone who watched the movie Moneyball, you know, Billy Bean had a team and he wanted it to play a certain way. And I, you know, the manager wouldn't play it, you know, said, but I want you to do this and I want you to do that. And well, the personnel here, and I'm going to put this guy here, and I'm going to, so he trades them. It's Joe's got these guys and he wants them to shoot threes. So he's like, I'm just going to put Hauser out there and I don't give a crap because I know that he's going to do what I want him to do. And
does Hauser ever shoot a two?
Every time he catches a ball, the dude's jacking a three. And so, you know, someone put this in the chat earlier, and I'm curious your guys' take on it. Like, Grant, I think some teams adjusted to him. They started running him off the three-point line there a little bit. But we did see him attack some closeouts early in the year and do some things we hadn't seen, some floaters and stuff like that, and a little bit of mid-range that we hadn't really seen from him or trying to take it. And I think that stopped too. And he really can't.
He was never comfortable doing that.
He's not comfortable and he can't get all the way to the basket. And that's certainly the place you don't want to be is a running floater if you're a 6'6 guy approaching the trees there, when really what you wanted to do was shoot. So I think Grant kind of got stuck. And somebody put in the chat, like, do you think some of the stuff he was doing earlier in the year that we're like, oh, that's different, is like hurting him now?
Actually,
because it isn't, it isn't what you actually need him to do, which is honestly, sometimes it's basic. Like, sometimes guys like Grant, you don't need them to evolve. You just need to be the thing that you were and be good at
it's
that.
It's exactly what Ime said last year. He has a narrow role, and we need him to stay in it.
That's it. So stay in your narrow role. Don't try to be Draymond. Don't try to be this guy. Don't try to be a bigger thing. But yeah.
Well, if you're not going to step it up, I mean, he never got comfortable doing it. That was the problem.
Sherrod, yeah.
Well, I was going to say that, and the fact that the one thing that I thought got to be pretty effective with was that corner three and being a defender. Teams were starting to take that away, so he had to have counters. But the problem for Grant is that his counters don't really allow him to be impactful. I mean, Grant putting the ball on the floor attacking is exactly what the defense wants, because they know he's either going to take a bad shot, he's going to make a bad pass, or he's going to turn the ball over more times than not. And that's partly why Grant doesn't look to do that as much. We've seen when Grant handles the ball, that is not a strength of his. And again, that's not a knock on him. There are a lot of guys in the NBA who are not very good ball handlers, but they're smart enough to know that's not who they are. So do exactly who you are. And I think Grant, in his desire to get better and become a more well-rounded player, I do think that some of the what would be staples of his game, I think he got away from. And I think he needs, hopefully this time off the court, it'll get him back to thinking about and focusing on things that he's really good at.
Yeah, and the irony of Grant is that he had to change his game from what he was in college because physically his profile wouldn't allow him to do the sort of things that made him a very effective college player. So it's not his style. He had to develop into that 3-and-D guy. He had to slim down a little bit so he could be a little bit more versatile in terms of positionally where he could play because he just simply is just not athletic enough at that size to be able to be kind of a guy who can do some of the things he got away with in college. So he had to evolve, and he did, and he found that narrow role, and then he kind of lost it. So that's just what he's got to get back to.
Yeah, you look at his shot profile this year, it's not drastically different, but 18% last year of his shots came at the rim, now just 13%. He only took 3 to 10 footers 17% of the time last year. That's up to 20. 10 to 16 up from 3 to 5. So you do see him getting caught in between more. Now, the amount of threes as a percentage of his total shot, relatively the same, but he's shooting so poorly on those in betweens, 33% from 10 to the 3-point line. They don't want those. They don't want those. They want them from Brown. They'll accept them from Brown, but not from Grant. And Smart can get in between there too and have some success. I think they're selective about the mid-rangers they want to take, and Grant doesn't fit that profile. They need him to be a three-point shooter, and maybe that's what he's working on behind the scenes is ways to get that shot off, the sidestep, whatever it needs to be. He can't just out-fake, though, and put the ball on the floor and halt the flow of the offense. They want to get those shots off quick, and that's where turnovers come in recently. They want to get those threes off quickly so they're not turning the ball over. They have a game style they want to play, and Grant just seemed to veer from that. But I don't agree with taking him out of the rotation as a solution to that. I don't think that's going to help him. Maybe it gets his mind right. I guess there's an argument for that. But you actually have to be out on the floor playing.
I don't get it at all.
Who you are?
He needs that reality check. He needed that. Look, you're not a.
It's not a matchup thing either. I don't believe that.
Well, that's what we thought at first. And again, we're giving
the benefit of the doubt. No, it's clearly not that, Bobby.
Because it never made sense, right?
That's why I think Joe Mazzulla wants to put him in the doghouse right now and say, hey, look, you think this spot rotation that you have is permanent? It's not. And this is his message to him. I like it. You do it now. You still have, 13 games left? I mean, I don't think this is set in stone, but he's going to have to regain Mazzulla's trust.
When do you go back to him?
Well, one of these matchups.
At some point on his trip, he needs to play. And he needs to play. And it can't just be like matchup mop up minutes. He's got to play at some point. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like someone like Houston. That'd be a good one to throw him out there against.
Houston, yeah, that's what I mean. One of those teams.
Yeah, you can't send him against the Rockets, can you?
You can do anything. He's out of the rotation.
You're the coach.
Oh, it's a G League team.
He's not coming back.
Why the heck not?
He may not.
You're just going to throw him in game one of the playoffs after he misses 15-20 games in a row?
I think if it's a message, you probably do. At some point, he's got a whatever. But I don't think it's a message. I think some games he's like, I don't think I need Grant tonight. I actually think...
You're the one who said it was a message.
I thought it... No, meaning like, I didn't say it was a message. I think the total package of what Grant is and what he's been doing has reached a point where... I just don't think Joe's just not about Grant right now. So I don't think it's a message in the sense of like, sit there, here's your punishment, and I'll bring you back and you better behave. I think he's just like, I don't think I need this guy. We'll continue this conversation. We lost Sherrod briefly. We'll try to get him back. Getting back into it, guys. We talked about, you had a great Tatum game tonight, but Tatum's Tatum. The Hawks played no defense, but he had it going.
He did?
This could have been a 50-point Tatum game if he wanted it. Didn't it feel like it? I think he could have gotten anything he wanted tonight.
You think he's listening to Joe's three-point message? Launching them. Just fire bombs 14. Away. He did it against Portland successfully in this
17
game.
17-1 game, 14 in this game.
Did he have 17 against Portland?
He had 17 in the overtime game against the Knicks, maybe?
The Knicks game, yeah.
And then he had big ones in that third quarter against Portland. Then they want him to take these pull-ups right now because it's drawn the defense back. So even if you finish 5 for 14, it opened up a ton of driving lanes in this game for other guys. And this was a big night for the Celtics at the rim. They missed a million layups in that Portland game. I thought they got back to their finishing inside in this game, particularly Brogdon. Blake had some nice cleanups at the rim. Brown got downhill. So they want Tatum firing these threes because it's going to open up areas for other guys to score. And, you know, it can look ugly at times. It just one possession he's pulling up and nailing it. The other, it's like rolling off the back of the rim or hitting the side of it. I still don't understand the shooting season he's having. He's right at league average, I guess, but this is a guy who has been an elite shooter at certain points of his career, and I guess it's just the volume that impacts that along with the pressure. Because 5 of 14, you want to if he was like 6 or 7, that would be an amazing night. Instead, you're probably just a little below what you're looking for in that kind of volume.
Yeah, it's basically where you're at, and that's the thing is the volume brings the number down. He's shooting an insane amount of threes per game, and obviously he's also the person saddled with those kind of late-in-the-clock ball-in-my-hands, what-am-I-going-to-do sort of threes, and he shoots.
So you're sneaking in just enough tough ones that it's going
to
bring the
so there's enough
down.
Tough ones that throws it down, and also, I mean, how many times does the ball rotate over to – how many wide-open ones does he get? I mean, he just gets too much attention. So, again, you have to factor that into the numbers. I've been a little tough on him because you'd still like – to see it a tick higher because he does miss a lot of, he does miss more like quote unquote gimmies, but he doesn't have tons of them, you know. There's always somebody around him, it's always, you know, somewhat contested, he has to create a lot of them himself. So yeah, it's the volume, and he's not afraid to shoot those threes at all. We talked a little bit about him, but Hauser,
you what know, a again, big night.
Again, it's always that trade-off. Like, you see that one play where, you know, he switches on to DeJounte Murray. And Murray cooks him, you know, crosses him over, goes to the left, he's gone, standing still, and you're like, okay, that's the downside. And teams see that, and they hunt him like crazy on these switches. But that doesn't happen as often as you would think, where he gets absolutely dusted.
But you know what happens, John? When they do that, it takes them out of their normal
rhythm. Takes them out of their rhythm.
And if he's able – and the thing that the Celtics have figured out, I think more times than not, they have figured out how to get him help so that he doesn't get totally cooked. Because, I mean, DeJounte Murray, I mean, he's cooking pretty much most players if he gets them in the ISO situation. So I don't look at that as this huge, like, detriment to Sam, because Sam basically – falls in line with about 85-90% of the players at that position when you're trying to guard DeJounte Murray. He's that good. But the Celtics have done a much better job as we've gotten deeper into the season of figuring out where to bring the help for Sam so that he doesn't get cooked. And Sam's job then is, if they're going to give me help defensively, I need to help my team offensively. And his confidence in terms of shot taking and shot making is very different the last couple of weeks than it was. And really, I go back to when he got benched and when he got an opportunity to get back into the rotation. He has not done anything detrimental to his status being in that rotation.
He looks like himself again.
He looks like the guy that was knocking down threes back in November and December and looked like one of the biggest steals, you know, on the Celtics roster. And that's what they're going to need if they're going to have that kind of deep playoff run that they've been talking about all season.
You know what's exciting, too? They're running plays for him.
Yeah, that's true.
As they should. He's your best flat-out shooter. Why the hell are you not running plays for the guy that you know his job literally is to make shots?
Well, yeah, and also because, you know, this is significant because I feel like the biggest reason why he was out of that rotation or in Joe Mazzulla's doghouse was because he was getting cooked on defense a lot of the time. And that last time it happened, it was against the Charlotte Hornets. And ever since that moment, it seemed like, okay, now when I'm coming in, I got to make sure I lock down defensively or I get back and transition when the Celtics are giving up a whole lot of points and not focus so much on if I miss two or three three-pointers, I'm going to be benched. You know what I mean? I feel like he had that headspace in a way, but also knowing that, look, if I buckle down defensively, I'm going to get extended minutes. And those extended minutes have led to this, what we're seeing now, him finding that rhythm offensively and being consistent. And once that consistency is shown, that's when you're able to put yourself in that rotation. You're there for good. And that's where he's been ever since, you know, right before the All-Star break and right into after the break. He hasn't really slowed down since.
I love what Sherrod said, because I do think, and Celtics should know this above all else, you know, one of the things, two instances you see the Celtics offense grind to a halt most often is those late game situations where for some reason or another, they just slow it. They walk it up, they do whatever, and they just slow their pace. That's one, that's infuriating. The second one is when they've got a juicy matchup on there and they hunt it. Because as Sherrod just said, you take yourself out of your offense when you're just looking for it. You might get one bucket early, but then you just keep going and keep going to it. And what ends up happening is you completely neutralize everybody else out there. You get out of your flow, and that becomes your everything. And I don't think it pays off enough to do that, because then the other team is like, okay, this is what they're doing. Then they're kind of set up for it. They're ready to help. And it just isn't as effective as you would think. I understand if, like, back when Isaiah was playing and you're like, okay, let's just switch and get somebody on him in the post, and there's nothing he's going to be able to, when you have massive size mismatches or something like that, sure. But just switching on to how, trying to get Hauser to switch on to you so you can try to cook him every single time, it's going to burn you. So this, you know, the Celtics, I wonder if they know that after having kind of suffered through some pitfalls on their own of like, we're not great when we hunt matchups. So maybe actually we can use this to our advantage, and maybe people will be sitting hunting Hauser matchups all day long, and that'll take them out of their rhythm. I don't know if that factors in the calculation, but it never goes as bad as you would think. You have a play like that against Murray, and then it's like, it didn't happen again. Everything was actually okay the rest of the time. And so I don't know. I mean, that's how I view it. If he's knocking down the shots, you're living with the defense. I keep using the same word to describe him. Competitive. He's competitive on defense. He's where he needs to be. He does his best.
Right now, he's
yeah.
No.
He's in the 45th percentile. So he's an average.
He's fine.
Defender.
That's the thing, is everyone's talking about
exactly
him like he's unplayably bad. He's not. Yeah. If he's somewhere in that mid-range, he's fine. He's fine.
You know, it's interesting. He gives up 0.96 points per possession on isolations. Grant gives up 0.93. So it's been comparable in that spot. Even Al, not 0.97, and he's not isolated a lot. But, you know, you're basically getting one possession a game where teams are lining up Hauser on average. Might be some more some games, might be some less. And it probably varies based on how much he plays. But he's done a better job with it, and he's big. I think that's what we forget. 6'8", taller than Grant. I don't know if he's longer. We'd have to take out the tape measure again.
I mean, Sam is a little
you get
Sam's
in there,
thicker
Bobby.
Than people realize. I mean, he's no twig out there.
Yeah, he's not a teeny guy. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's got good size for the wing position, and even the four in today's game.
In today's game, he's perfect. He's ideal.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Bobby's favorite. Excuse me, old man Al.
I thought you were going to do a Luke segment.
No.
Are we really?
No. We're going to pivot to a guy.
The original favorite.
The OG, the guy right there. Back to this game, guys. Bobby tweeted late in the game. I don't think nationally, what was it, Bobby?
People realize what we're seeing. Al is playing right now. Yeah.
Don't think enough people nationally realize how good Al Horford's playing right now. I'm not calling you out for hyperbole, but he's been friggin' great.
I think he's up to the second most 3-point attempts of his career, shooting 45%, which is a ridiculous total. That probably actually comes down in a 3-for-5 game. Oh no, that goes up in a 3-for-5 game with the 60% tonight. So it's incredible. I think he gets them up there quickly and efficiently. He's really got that release down right now in a great way. Almost had that game win or two against the Knicks earlier this week, or about a week ago now, if you remember. And he just brings so much to the table. A couple big blocks tonight in this game as the Hawks rallied. You had good passing. He's always going to give you 2-3 assists, find guys in the movement of the offense. All you're missing from him right now is attacking mismatches around the rim or giving you that little finish inside, which you know he's capable of, which he can give you. In fact, one of the recent games, Joe Sway, they threw him in the low block early in the game. I like when they do that with him. And he's able to carry this load with Rob out. He's just in such great shape. His game, as Jimmy's talked about and others, doesn't really need physicality the way it did earlier in his career. So I think that helps sustain him too. And then, of course, the off nights as well. He's playing so well, you don't even worry as much about Rob being out. And like we've talked about, you might even be better off with Al at center than Rob, the way you want to play stylistically.
It is. You're giving up a ton in some cases. You're giving up a ton because you see the rebounding thing.
Al doesn't rebound.
They were non-competitive in some cases. Capella was just going up and just grabbing boards uncontested, on the offensive glass. There's nobody there.
A lot of second chances for them, too.
Nobody there. So that's it's a trade-off. But again, who do you want to be and what style do you want to play, I think is fair. Sherrod?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing about Al right now. He has a very specific role. And him and I, we've talked about this in the past. The role that he is being asked to play is very different than the role that he's played throughout the course of his career. Al, remember, before Boston, when he was in Atlanta, Al was a banger. He was a guy that played around the rim. He could rebound. Now they're asking him to be a guy that can create space for others and be basically a 3-and-D guy, shoot corner threes, every now and then put it on the floor. But when you put it on the floor, you're looking to make the pass to someone who's open, hoping that you'll suck the defense in and you'll find someone open, which he's very good at. But the idea that they can be better without Rob, I think there's certain matchups that can be true, but you're much better off when you've got a healthy Rob because that gives you the rim protection that you don't have without him. Blake Griffin, I thought, did a great job tonight. Maybe the best game I think Blake has had in terms of being an interior defender that he's had since he's been in Boston, but you're not going to get that every night because that's just not who he is, particularly at this point in his career. So they can get by with Al at that center spot. But if we're talking about them winning a championship, which is the focus, you're going to need Rob for at least one and probably two playoff series to be a difference maker.
The trade-off's White and Rob. You're not going to sit Al.
But haven't we learned our lesson here? Have we not at this point learned, that you're just playing them together this year, I don't think it's going to work. I think we have a
40, that group keeps getting outscored.
We have a 40 game sample size. Which one? The Rob Al
group, double big. Yeah,
we have a Rob Al sample size that lasted about 35 games last year, where they played like they were from another planet. And I think that we've somehow forgotten how bad double big was before that. In all of those times, especially when you were trying to do it with Tristan, earlier
Tristan
in the year.
And Tice.
Tristan and Tice double big, but we carried it through. You had about a 35 game stretch where those guys were playing out of their minds. But then, this year again, small sample sizes, and certainly what you've seen.
You're up to a 120 offensive rating with White instead of Rob.
It's changed, okay? Because last year Rob was different, and last year Rob changed everything. So really it was Rob being on the court. Rob impacted so many different things for you in ways that didn't necessarily show up in his individual stats, but the team was better with him out there at all times. And that was the case going back to 2 years ago until, when Brad finally realized, like, I should stop playing this Tristan guy, right? And everyone's like, yup, but Rob's not Rob. And if he, if he doesn't become Rob again this year because of injuries or limitations, you have to change your thinking. You can't just stuff him in there and be like, well, it worked before.
You're going to play Rob some amount.
You're going to play him. I'm saying you can't just say, like, these guys were awesome. I'm going back to if Rob comes back with 7 games left, 8 games left in the regular season, you're just going to stuff him in that starting lineup and be like, that's what I'm going with in the playoffs. I don't know. You can't do it now.
I actually think Joe probably has some doubts about it at this point, especially if he wants them to play the 5-out style. And you're still going to play Rob. In fact, you can still play Rob with the starters by taking out White quickly into a second unit midway through quarters and get a 4-minute, 5-minute Rob burst like you talk about, John. And that did amazing. That's what made us want Rob in the starting lineup again in the first place.
I'm playing hockey shifts with Rob the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, that starting group coming together.
Over the boards real quick, 3-4 minutes, get right back. That's it.
That starting group as a bench unit thrived early in the year. In fact, I think it was the Pacers game on the road, the last one, where we were like, Rob's playing so great, you got to get him back in that starting lineup. And then he went to the starting lineup and didn't go as well. I think you saw early this year the best way to use Rob at this point. And it took me a long time, but I'm ready to abandon double big as the starting unit.
Very quickly from our intrepid producer, Amit, who's working behind the scenes here, sending me info. Right now, after tonight's game, at this moment, Al is still second in the league at three-point shooting. Luke Kennard is 45.6647.
Right there.
Al is 45.66.
Yeah, I was trying to say that like 7 minutes ago. Yeah.
It is like...
Wow, he threw it in the calculator.
It is razor thin. Sorry, Josue. Oh my goodness gracious. That is friggin' tight, tight, tight. That's where Al is.
Yeah, do you know who's third?
Brogdon. Isn't it amazing? You look at this team with the people that they had, and you were like, okay, I like the shooting. This team could be pretty good this year. Who had friggin' Al 2 and Brogdon 3 in the NBA in shooting? I mean, if you said that at the beginning of the year, you'd be like, oh my God, this team's never going to lose a game, you know? So, I mean, right. It's amazing you're getting those kind of contributions from those players.
They're wide open. They're wide open. And this is why we thought White would shoot better here. This is why we thought Brogdon would return.
Yeah, because of the Tatum and Brown gravity, yeah.
Yeah, he would return to what he did with Giannis early in his career. And Al, we've seen him do this playing with Isaiah. We've seen him do this playing with Tatum at different points earlier in his career. And Kyrie and the whole group. He can hit wide open threes, and they leave them wide open because they need to defend the rim too. And you see with this five out lineup, you're really stretching a defense then. And Horford really knows how to screen for them too. White knows how to screen for them. That's freeing guys up. You're thriving offensively with this group out here, and for them to still score 120 points for 100 possessions with that group, outscoring opponents by 13 points in 300 minutes, that's great evidence that you just got to roll with that group. 70% assist rate. The only thing, John, like you said, you lose about like 6 points on the defensive rebounding, and you really lose most of your offensive rebounding without Rob out there. But like I said, you're still going to play him. You're still going to play him a lot. You can stagger those bigs. Then you don't even have to play Blake, Cornette, all those guys down the line, Muscala. You can just share those 2 minutes.
But we'll the other thing too, Bobby, is that it kind of goes back to your point you made earlier about Tatum and his shooting. You know, Tatum is shooting pretty average, but the shots that his presence has created for others, getting easy looks, wide open looks, kind of, frankly, it buffers that number, and it doesn't look nearly as bad. And now what we're seeing from Tatum and Brown is a lot more, not just passing the ball, but actually passing it to guys in position to score. You look at the box score tonight, Tatum had 6 assists, I think 1 turnover. Jalen had, what, 7?
He had 7 and 1. That's an amazing Jalen game.
They combined for 13 assists and had a combined 2 turnovers.
It's amazing.
I did hate that one, though. That one was ugly.
It was ugly. But it doesn't matter. That's a great point, Sherrod. I mean, and I think that's the thing. Is like, it's easy to get mad at Tatum, and because, you know, the expectations are so high, he's a superstar. And, you know, you've seen hot Tatum before, and you're like, just be that, you know? But it's his job. His job is to jack those threes. His job is to draw the defense. His job is to make everybody think he's going to shoot all the time, to be able to free up those other guys to do what they're doing. And you're right. That's the best testament to those guys, to Tatum's play on the court, is one, the on off of numbers, but also how well other people like Brogdon and like Horford are doing, and just how wide open they are, you know, when they're on the court there.
That's the best part about this one today.
Yep.
You're seeing the team respond to what Joe wants them to do, top to bottom, you know, responding to his emphases. And I think all the different little areas he talks about, whether it's offensive rebounding, whether it's the amount of threes they want to take, or the fouling, like the four factors, they're keyed in on all that. I guess the only thing that, and of course the threes do worry me, but the only other thing I think about, like really hammering on this very analytical style of play, because when you hear Joe talk in the huddle, he's pointing out these stats, right? He's pointing out the different advantages they have in terms of shot output or percentages or things. Is that going to keep guys keyed in, engaged? Is it going to keep guys overthinking? Because they have these lapses, right? And you even saw them tonight. The lead slips to 5. The lead slips to 8. The lead slips to 7. It's going to happen in games, but it's happened a little bit consistently for them. And you do have to have Joe reining in things with the timeout again. You do have to have Joe making tough lineup decisions down the stretch of games. I just wonder if there's just sort of this really tight, tight focus on analytics that is going to leave guys overthinking a little bit out there on the floor rather than just making a basketball play.
Well, it is weird.
Feel of the game.
It's weird how adamant he's gotten about it, like demonstrative.
Don't even see it in their play, John. Like, they're like, we got to get to
this three. Should we shoot the three instead? It's actually weird to insist on it in the way that he does. And at this point, to be able to do it, it actually means that he hasn't seen it nearly as much as he wants. And I think a lot of what the stuff you're seeing, again, I really do believe the Hauser stuff now is like, I know this guy's doing, like, if the guys I'm putting out there won't, I'm going to put guys out who will. I'm not saying
Blake does for sure, too. Yeah.
I mean, Blake, sure, yeah, I'll shoot it if I'm over here. Why not? But it doesn't matter. Like, I do think he is really, really, really convinced that's the way. And I'm not going to argue that it's not. But you're right. It does. You do wonder if it jives with the idea of, like, can't we just, like, take what the game gives us and just play within the flow and play ball and, like, take open shots when they're open but otherwise don't? Or am I literally, is my goal out here just to try to find the first open three we can possibly get and take it? Is that who we want to be? So there is still a weird little identity kind of, I wouldn't say crisis, but, you know, trying to figure out exactly how they're going to play, you know, after the way they played early in the year. I really think Joe just wants that again. Like, we were moving the ball so well and it was resulting in so many good looks. Can't we just be that? You know, don't dribble, don't try to friggin', don't set guys up, just move it and jack it and go, and whatever happens happens. I think that's what he wants to be. So I don't know. There's a lot more to talk about. They're on the road.
Only which 8 means, turnovers tonight's pretty good too.
We'll be here. Are any of you lunatics covering any of these other games on the road here? Sherrod?
I'll be in Portland. Yeah, I'll be in Portland and Salt Lake City.
Crazy, crazy kids. All right. Well, we'll all be here doing Garden Reports. We'll be trying to track
spring
down Sherrod.
It must be spring break.
From the road. It's spring break for me. So is it for you too?
Yeah. Not making it to Sacramento though, Sherrod, huh? That's the most exciting environment, I think, on the
road. I have class on that period of time. Yeah. So right. The Draper Sherrod reunion will not occur.
Oh, that's right.
Shout out to Kyle Draper, who came out and made a big announcement about himself, a personal announcement that he'd been battling, his own problems with alcohol. And he's been sober for 6 years, and he put it out there kind of for the world to know. And so it's, hats off to Drapes for
proud of my boy.
Yeah, for doing what he's done and for the struggle that he's gone through and for being open about it. And I know he's gotten a lot of love on Twitter, but for those of you out there that remember Drapes from his NBC days and obviously one of Sherrod's close personal friends, and we all work together over at NBC together, good for Drapes. So since you mentioned Sacramento, we'll give a shout out to Drapes. 6 years sober. Congrats, buddy. We're going to wrap
He told us don't sleep on Sacramento, too. He's been saying that, so this is the year, I guess.
He did. Give me some Draper on the show when we do it. We're going to tell you one more time because it's a big thing for us. And again, I've gotten some tweets on it. For those of you looking to sign up, FanDuel.com/Boston. Again, the FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, has partnered with us here at CLNS Media as their number one digital partner here in the market. FanDuel.com/Boston. FanDuel is the exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. So again, go check that out. Take advantage of a terrific promotion, which is right here on the screen, as you can see. Bet five, get 200 bonus bets. Again, that's the URL. There's a little code there. You can scan that on your screen if you want to check it out, and it'll take you right to it. Really easy to do on mobile. Go sign up fast. Note, if you're interested in doing this kind of stuff, this is a great place to do it. Again, it's safe, it's easy, it's fun. And again, if this is your thing, FanDuel is, as we said, number one sportsbook in America, one of the most trusted sportsbooks out there. So you can always feel good about placing your money here.
You're going to try it out anyway. It's new, it's fresh, just got here.
It's funny money. You bet five, you get 200, you play around with it, see what happens there. Again, please gamble responsibly. If this is something that you are interested in, make sure you place your bets. Go to FanDuel, take advantage of the offer. If you do this again, FanDuel.com/Boston, as we said, it really helps us out here at the Garden Report. So we would really greatly appreciate it. We always appreciate you guys. Josue's gone. We always appreciate you guys.
As soon as you put that down. I reached down for a second. Damn.
We appreciate you guys joining us as always.
Magic beat the Heat tonight.
And the Golden State came back, and they looks like they took down the Bucks in OT.
Crazy game.
And they were
by
down.
The way, I didn't even say it tonight. This is probably the team you want to play round one, right? Atlanta.
Yeah. There's no way Atlanta can beat you.
Four or five games.
Yo, send us to the ATL. Let's do it. Come on.
Bring it.
That's what Joe Sway is thinking about. I was talking about the ease of victory.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Put this thing on the screen one more time. I think it's kind of cool. If you scan it, I can see it. Somebody scan it right now. Anybody.
I'm on.
Light it up.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it. It lights up. It lights up for me. Give me another one. Anybody.
Anybody. You just pull out your phone. A lot of people are watching on their phone. That's
there you go. That's me.
Okay. Yeah, we can see it.
I just did it.
Yep, there's another one. Scan it, boom, we can see it. It lights up. I get a little prompt when you do it. Again, go check that out for the FanDuel situations here if you guys are interested in signing up. We really would appreciate it. We're going to wrap it. Thanks again for hanging out with us at the Garden Report. Sherrod Blakely in Atlanta. Bobby Manning, dressed for success with his Horford jersey in the background in case he needs it.
I got a throwback here.
Yeah. Hey, I know what that is.
Yeah. Oh, look at me. Me too.
This is how the sponsors know we still love them.
We still love you guys. I love you guys at Legends. You want to sponsor us again? Give us some clothes? Fine.
Yeah, otherwise, we don't rock your stuff. So that's how you know we like it.
That's cool. Yep. And again, thank you guys for hanging out. Thank you for supporting our sponsors. We will see you guys.